Michael, stand up, the great prince which stands for the children of thy people. So Michael, the angel, is he's a particular, is named angel, first of all. Gabriel, that's another one. But this one's Michael. This is the angelic prince, the prince of angels, archangel, who is tied to Israel. So Israel's angel, countries have angels. So Israel's angel is Michael. And he then has to fight for Israel against the kingdom of darkness. And so you probably don't read a lot or know a lot or care a lot about the unseen world, the world that when you pray, there are angelic, evil angelic forces that fight for you, and there are good angelic, did I say against you?
Yeah,
the evil ones are against you, and then there are the good ones that are for you. So it doesn't matter whether you like the idea or not, it's in the Bible, and it tells us that what goes on earth is always reflected in what goes on in heaven. In other words, if there's a battle on the earth, there's a battle in the heavens, and vice versa. So they're parallel. They go on at the same time. And so if you don't understand that God has dominion in heaven, but also dominion over earth, but also in the mid-heavens, there are battles. And there are battles that go on all the time. And so right now, the angelic hosts, good and bad, are gearing up for a big battle, because the Antichrist is about, this is their biggest day, this is their biggest time. So naturally, they're gearing up to have a battle, hoping this time to win. And they will win. That's amazing that God lets the bad guys win. But it only lasts a little while. It only lasts a little while. So this supernatural battle that goes on in the heavenlies is what Daniel gets to look in on. And if it weren't for Daniel, we wouldn't know about a lot of these angelic battles. So the angel that watches over Persia, I wrote Persia on the board, Persia's the second great kingdom that will rise up to destroy the Jewish people. Not to destroy them, but to chasten them. Not to destroy them, but to chasten them. And he started out with Babylon, let's say about 600. I could give it dates, but I don't care about the dates right now. But just about the year 600, and it'll only last 70 years, because that's how many years Babylon was able to reign. Again, it actually turns out to be 70 years, but not exactly as we look at it. Nevertheless, and then after that comes Persia. That's the second one, and then Greece, and then Rome. And there can never be any kingdom after Rome. There can only be Rome, and then a new version of Rome, and then a new version of Rome. So ancient Rome, medieval Rome, modern Rome, but it's still Rome. And that's the end. There can be nobody after Rome. So that's the fourth kingdom of Daniel, which is actually the sixth kingdom of the Gentiles. The first one was Egypt, then Assyria, then Babylon, Persia, Greece, and Rome. But Daniel lives not during the time of Assyria, but he lives during the time of Babylon. You remember, he was a young man, he was taken into captivity, and so he lives almost well into his 90s. So he gets to be the whole 70 years when Israel was in Babylon. But then he has another bunch of years in Persia, and he's the top guy. is the top guy, because he prophesied and said, this kingdom is only going to last so long. Why? He read the Bible. He read what Jeremiah had to say, and he knew what Isaiah was saying, and so on. In other words, he heard those other, and he read what they wrote. So it wasn't like he was brilliant, but it's just like when he read that, he could then hear God speaking to him because he knew the scriptures. That's practical meaning. If you don't know the scriptures, you're not going to hear God. I mean, the scriptures are written for you to read, so then God can tell you secrets that you cannot read. Otherwise, you're not going to know what's happening. But anyway, he was knowledgeable. And why read Daniel? Because Daniel's related to Israel, whereas the book of Revelation is related to the church. Why? Because Daniel also covers the same period, focusing on Israel, and the book of Revelation gives the details, same period though, focusing on the church, especially since the time of Jesus until today, and even 1,000 years after today. So 3,000 years, book of Revelation. Daniel covers 3,500 years. But he's interested in Israel. Why? Because we haven't arrived on the scene yet. But he knows about Jesus. He knows about the Messiah. He knows about what's coming. So Daniel's given the picture that he needs to have in respect of Israel. Does that all make sense? You don't have to get it. One thing about prophecy and about the prophets is don't try to get every detail, because you won't. If you don't know the whole Bible, you won't understand anything in the prophets either. So you have to have a big picture in order to get the little detail picture later of, oh, what king is that? And you don't know if it's Darius unless it tells you. You don't know if it's Cyrus unless it tells you. So you don't know if it's Ahasuerus unless it tells you. Those are all kings of Persia. And we could look at all of those, but rather than do that, I'm just going to give you what Daniel 12 says. And at that time, Michael stood up, the great prince which stands for the children of the people, which is Israel. And there shall be a time of trouble, such as never was since there was a nation, even to that same time, and at that time thy people shall be delivered, every one that shall be found written in the book. And again, does it sound mysterious? Yeah. But again, it's because you'd have to have knowledge of history. The problem with our religion, actually the beauty of our religion, is that it's a historical religion. In other words, it's not a religion that's written on your heart. It's not a natural religion. All the other religions in the world are also historical, but they have no basis. They're just, bunch of words that people come up with. They're demonic, satanic kingdoms. Ours is the only one that's true. So what you read about Israel is he's gonna talk about what's going to happen now, today, with Israel. And today, Israel is about to go into her worst period, or I could say her best period. Depends on whether you're righteous or wicked. Because Israel is going to be troubled, but at the same time, the trouble, Jacob's trouble, 3.5 years of Jacob's trouble, which is right around the corner. The trouble also is the time of the purifying of Levi. So as Jacob's being troubled, the same fire, the same furnace, the same affliction, the same trial that's happening on Israel is actually purifying Israel. In other words, it's killing the flesh, but it's purifying the spirit. Or it's killing off the bad side, but it's keeping the good side. Y'all see that? So end times is, I would be very careful of listening to anybody about the end times, because it's not like crystal clear. And it's deliberately not crystal clear. It's deliberately not. God is telling you everything exactly as it is, but you can't understand it, because it's been sealed. Okay, so when we open these books, it's going to tell you only what you need to know, not what you want to know. Well, how big was that angel? It doesn't tell you that. Or if it wants to tell you, it'll tell you. But it usually doesn't tell you those kind of things. What kind of shirt did he have? You know, it's not interested in that. So you have a lot of questions because you're interested in your own point of view. You're interested from my point of view. How does that relate to me? And it's good. It's good that you want to know that. But that doesn't mean you're going to get that out of it. And those, when it happens later, you go, oh, I get it. That was written in Daniel. So, but meditate on these scriptures, and you learn something about the end times, which you cannot find out in any history book. You cannot find it out. And there are things in the Old Testament that are not in the New Testament, because the New Testament assumes that you read the Old Testament. So that's the trunk of the tree. You're just one of the branches later, and so on and so forth. All right. 2, and many of them that sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake, some to everlasting life, some to shame and everlasting contempt. Ah, 2 groups. So Israel has 2 groups in it. The wicked Israel that will not repent, and then the wicked Israel that will repent and become the good Israel. In other words, God always had a group in Israel that were looking for the consolation of Israel. Why? Because they read Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy. In other words, they read the prophets. And so they knew, hey, the Messiah is going to come. Anna and Simeon, when Jesus was born 2,000 years ago, they knew exactly what time it was because they'd read Daniel. They had read Daniel. And if you read Daniel, which I do, but you need to read Daniel because it tells you what's going to happen. And it's neat to know it before it happens so that when it happens, you're right there, as Simeon was and as Anna was. We went into the temple when Jesus was circumcised on the 8th day. How could they know when to go into the temple on the 8th day? When he's circumcised. I mean, they didn't have schedules in those days or emails or, you know, they didn't have a knowledge of what was going on or telephones. Oh, Jesus is in the temple right now. Nobody cared about Jesus. I mean, Jesus was a non-person. He was not important. So it totally insignificant. It turns out, though, the Bible's interested in him. And now we are, because we're his people. So we want to know about Jesus, everything about him. Well, you know what? You can't find out very much. But you can find out everything you need to know, because this is the only place you could find out, first of all. And second of all, it's accurate. It's completely, perfectly accurate. So our religion is historical religion. The others are, well, all the Greek gods, for example, are ideas. You know, Aphrodite, the goddess of love, that kind of thing. Mercury, the goddess of war. And so it's a concept, and then they put a god's name to it and so on. And a lot of them are just ancestors. Jupiter is just Japheth. Remember Noah had 3 sons? Japheth, that's one of the sons. Jupiter, same thing. It's exactly the same thing. So Jupiter is not just a planet. Jupiter is a person called Japheth who happened to be one of the sons of Noah. And most of us came from that sun. So we're Jupiter kids. But anyway, rather than get into all of that, because that's all, you don't need to know about all that, but that happens to be the case. And so Zeus and all those names are ancestors, or they're just simply gods that are made up to be concepts. In Egypt, you have alligator gods and cat gods and all kinds of animal gods and whatnot. And so on. And all those gods are really ancestors, and they're just made up things. Like, let's say we'll have Bess the cat, and she'll be in charge of, you know, female births and stuff like that. And so that was just a convenient way of knowing, oh, don't worry about, you know, so-and-so's baby. Bess is going to be there, the cat. And then when you died, you're going to meet Osiris, which is Nimrod, which is, you know, blah, blah. So he's the god of the underworld where you die. And he was the first pharaoh of Egypt, who was the first emperor of the world. So you meet that guy. Those are ways that they could tell the story to a primitive people, writing it in hieroglyphics for the priests, but telling it to the people who could see little pictures. Oh, yeah, that's what he looks like. It isn't what he looks like at all, because it's symbolic. All right. God, in that kind of world, is doing his own story. Only his is very accurate and real instead of full of nonsense. The others you have to sort through as a bunch of hogwash and lies, because they just make up numbers and they make up stuff. And their accuracy is very questionable. And they, verse 3, and they that be wise, that's us, shall shine as the brightness of the firmament, that is like the sun. And they that turn many to righteousness, those are other good ones, wise ones, and now turn many that will be turned to righteousness, as the stars forever and ever. In other words, they have a brightness. But thou, O Daniel, shut up. No, shut up the words. So thou, O Daniel, shut up, close, seal the words that I've given to you. Why does he do that? Because if they were going to be done the next day, he wouldn't have sealed them. They're being sealed because he's speaking for thousands of years. He's speaking for long, long periods of time. And so that speaking, or that prophecy that he has, nobody got that prophecy. That was Daniel was given that prophecy. He was able to see the first 3,500 years of the earth, Daniel. The next 3,500 years, Daniel prophesies over. And so he actually knows what's going to happen. You know, he knows everything that happened up to his point. He's the middle guy. In the middle of history, in the very middle of history, Daniel. 3,500 years to him, he's standing on the top of the mountain. Then 3,500 years going down. Everything after Daniel is called the last days, because it's the last half of the week. Because for God, the earth is only 7,000 years, period. We've already had now 6,000. We're already in the 7,000th. And so the earth is divided. You remember with God, a day equals 1,000 years, and 1,000 years equals a day. The way God looks at it, it's just a day. The way we look at it, that's 1,000 years. And nobody has ever lived 1,000 years on earth. Nobody. Who was the oldest one? Methuselah. How many years did he live? 969 years, 31 short. He almost made it. And what happened to him? Why didn't he live another 31 years? The flood. He died the day, the moment, the hour that it started to rain. And I'm sure they were just having his funeral. He just had died. And they went, we better get in the boat. And so they left off. I mean, he died exactly. He had to die before the flood, because he wasn't going to be on the boat. And so he dies and never finishes the 1,000. And he was thinking to himself, you know, I think I'm going to make it. I think I'm going to be the first guy that hits that 1,000 mark. But nobody in the Bible is named who has more than, how many did Adam have? 930, right, and so on and so on. So they had longer lives, and the dinosaurs lived longer, and they were bigger because they lived longer and they ate more stuff. But after the flood, they kind of dwindle away, and the last of the dinosaurs, I guess there's a few still in Zaire or someplace, and the Japanese dig them up every once in a while in the Japanese Sea and all that kind of stuff. If you follow those kind of things, you can be fascinated by it. But the truth is, that age is gone. I know it's in Jurassic Park, it's still here. That age is actually gone. And so they're trying to incubate those eggs and bring them forth. But thou, O Daniel, shut up the words, seal the book, even to the time of the end. So you want to know about the end times? It's in Daniel's book. In other words, you can read it, but it's sealed, meaning you can't understand it any more than what you need to. Yet God wrote it, so you can read it. But you have to go, wonder what that means, because I don't exactly know. And you have to read the whole Bible, as I said, to find out some of what it's talking about. But some of it is sealed, so you can't know until it happens. Then you go, See, God was telling us. So the main thing is always be ready for the Lord today, because there may not be a tomorrow. Now, I can tell you for sure it's not going to come tomorrow. I'll tell you for sure, without a doubt. But I can also tell you it's about to come. We're very, very close. It's within your lifetime, probably even within my lifetime. Before I'm 90 for sure, the Lord should return. But it could be even before I'm 80, and that's the problem. And that's why you can't exactly figure it. So I'm keeping the life insurance plan, and I'm okay with Social Security. It's okay for a few years yet. I'm going to be okay, so don't worry about me. I'll be fine. The truth is, you must plan your life in light of the future, which is someday you're going to die. But you will live as long as God has a program for you. So I always try to get a program from God, so I can stay alive. God, do I have any more jobs? Well, you need to do this. Oh, good. How am I going to live then? Because I have a job that God wants me to do. And you cannot die in the Bible unless you're done with your job. You hear what I'm saying? So I figure I'm going to live a while because I know I have a job to do. And I knew when I fell off the roof, I would not die. I never had a second, I guarantee you, a second of fear or worry or thought that I wouldn't live and that I wouldn't be fine, even though I should be dead and should have been demolished, crippled, at least brain damaged or something. And some say I am, but I don't think so. some think he lost his mind. Then I got to read this part. But thou, Daniel, shut up the word, seal the book, even to the time of the end. Here's the time of the end. Many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall be increased. How many know you live in the time when knowledge is increased? In other words, data is everywhere. But who has the wisdom to figure it out? Norman LaBrosse. I mean, that's it. Norman LaBrosse has that. He has that knowledge. You got to figure out, with all this data coming in, what do I do with it? Because there's tons out there, and then tons, and then tons, and then more tons. There's no way. Even the government files, which are extensive and massive on big computers, they can't keep up with all the data either. So they have little code words to try to sift through it. But it's an impossible job. I'll just tell you right now, man will never have the knowledge that he seeks. If you're a king, if you're a government, you know that knowledge is power. And so you want as much knowledge about the citizen as you can get to find out if they owe you anything or if they're doing something evil and wrong and bad, and you can get them on that. And so they want knowledge about your medical thing and what you've done here and your schooling and everything. They want to try to keep that. But it's very hard because the government's made up of people. I don't know if you know that or not, but they're people, and people are often corrupt and inept, both. So you can't do it. As hard as they try, it's hard to keep up with us. So you don't. Now, if you had billions of dollars, they know you. But if you're like the rest of us, they don't know you and they don't care about you. So if you say something, they'll look at the kind of house you live in and the kind of car you drive and whatever. And they sort it out quickly because they can't handle all the data. So this increase of knowledge right now is so extensive, nobody can even keep up with it. Every few years, everything has to be thrown out and you have to start all over again and so on. And so it's very hard to find out the truth. Even though we have more published today than ever before, it's very hard to get truth out of that or wisdom out of that. What do I do with all that? So I know it. So I know this about medicine, or I know this about whatever. Actually, still can't cure the common cold and that kind of stuff. So I know this, that the Bible says the poor you're going to have always.
Yeah.
Right there, I know one thing. The perfectionists are not going to get that one. Jesus said it, the poor you have always. That means you're never going to solve those problems in society. We could solve it in the church, but the church would have to want to. The church would have to want to. And to this moment, the church doesn't really want to. It just makes piecemeal deals. But God knows everything, and God's cool. I just tell you, God is not chewing his fingernails. God is not up there nervous about what's going on. He's got it all planned out. He knows exactly what it's going to do and what it's going to be. And he can project his majesty like that, anywhere in the universe, anytime, over whole peoples. He could wipe out whole nations. He can do anything he wants, anytime. So he's really not nervous about anything. He can't be overthrown. His word can never die, can never stop. All the words you have, you don't need them on a computer. They go out into the universe. God knows them all. He's got them all written down. So everything you've ever thought, said, done, felt, it's all there. It's even written on the synapses of your brain. And God can recover it, you know, just like you can recover data that somebody has put in and thrown in the trash and it's gone and so on, but it isn't. It's still there. It's indelible. It's written in such a way that God actually knows everything before the beginning of the world. He knew it all. So he must have a really big brain. I mean, no, God is smart. That guy is smart. If he was smart enough to make you, he's smart. Amen? Because you know how smart you are. Well, God's just a little bit smarter. Then I, Daniel, looked, and behold, there stood other two, the one on this side of the bank of the river, and on the other side of the bank of the river. So now he's seeing two. And one said to the man clothed in linen, which was upon the waters of the river, how long shall it be to the end of these wonders? And I heard the man clothed in linen, which was upon the waters of the river, when he held up his right hand and his left hand. Now the right hand always refers to God's redemptive side. Always, always, only, always. The left hand always refers to his creation side. So over here you have the good news. Over here you have what's going on in the world, and all the judgment comes on the left side, not the right. All the hope comes on the right side. So whenever God raises his right hand to swear an oath, those are the promises of God. These are the commands of God. This is what you must do, and this is what God said he would do. So you can live by either one of those. If you want to live by the promises, right hand. You want to live by the laws, left hand. So in other words, if you want to know, what do I have to do to get to heaven? Left hand, be perfect. What does God have to do? He is perfect, and you can just live by his promise. I like the right hand better, because there's nothing for me to do on the right hand, because he's done it all. And he swears to do everything concerning me. Well, I like that. That's cool. Go for it, God. That's cool. I don't even have to know what's going on. God knows. God's my Father, not on earth, in heaven. And he knows everything that's going on, and he rigs everything on my behalf or on your behalf, depending on how you look at it. I look at it from my point of view. You get to look at it from your point of view. Hey, is this good news for me or not? To have God do everything and me do nothing. I like the nothing part. I like where I can just goof around and, you know, do stuff, and God covers me. How many know that God covers you? You're certainly not perfect. If you were on this side of the ledger, you'd be in trouble. Because on this side, you have to be worthy. You have to prove yourself. You have to be clean. You have to be pure. I don't like that side. I don't qualify over there. But on this side, here, I can be me. I can be anything I am and let God figure it all out and let God fix it and let God perfect me. I like that side better. So if there's no hope on this side, there's only hope on this side. So there's never been a time in the history of the world that there hadn't been hope. because of God's promises. So we stand on the promises. We live by the promises. And I can tell you, in this world, nobody else has that kind of anchor, that kind of rock, that kind of certain knowledge. That makes a huge difference in your life. Otherwise, you're floundering over here. You haven't figured out where you came from, where you're going, and why you're here. But over here, we know exactly where we came from. We know that we used to be from the dirt. Then we heard about Jesus, said we're sorry about that, and so on, and just really started believing in Jesus. And then he said he'd take care of everything. Well, okay, I don't even know what it is. I didn't even read all the fine print. I only know one thing. It's all good news. And it's not good news to God. It's good news to me. It's all on my side. If God be for you, who can be against you? I mean, forget the left side. I mean, those guys have nothing but darkness ahead. So how enlightened is this world, which is heading for darkness and death and sorrow and sadness and blah, blah, blah? Whereas for me, and I didn't do anything to get this, it's just God likes me. It's amazing. Did you know that God likes everybody? He actually wants everybody on the left hand to go under the right hand, but they won't do it, and he won't force them. So since he won't force them, how are they going to get there? Well, we're the light. And when they see our good works, they'll want to come over and be where we are. Well, unfortunately, we're not that productive yet. How many have noticed that you're not productive personally? So if you're not mature, if you're not growed up, you're probably not much use to the guys on this side, because the Buddhists and the Hindus don't have a clue. The Mohammedans, they don't have a clue. So all those other religions are all dumping all the weight on man, as though man had to do something to prove himself. Go tie a bomb to your, to your breast or something, and go and blow up some Israelis or something. Well, that's a silly religion, because it puts all the weight on me to blow myself up while I'm killing off the Israeli bad guys so I can go to heaven. So unfortunately, that's not how you get to heaven, but that is how you fly out of the bus, or whatever you're in. It just kind of destroys you. But hey, your family gets $25,000 or some kind of fee or something for doing that, and the beer that you were promised ain't going to happen. And so the girls, all those virgins, not going to happen. So a lot of religions are really, and they sincerely believe in this kind of stuff, especially if you're 18 years old. I mean, that is cool. Beer and virgins, hey, I'm in. Give me one of those bomb things. I'll take it. And they're willing to throw away their lives. Why? For something that is just man-made. It's not God. It's not the truth. So on the left hand, it's all confusion and darkness. On the right hand, it's crystal clear. Jesus is the answer. I mean, if you knew nothing else, Jesus. Just Jesus. Jesus. There it is. I don't have to be good over here, because I never was. And I never will be. And I couldn't be if I wanted to be. But I don't want to be, and I'm still not going to be. But he is. That's all I needed to know. That he, not only is God good, not only did he send his son down, send him down for me, the bad guy. The guy that doesn't deserve anything. And you. Did you know you're equal to me? Isn't that sad? You are not better than I am. That is sad. That is sad. You have not risen very high. However, since I'm God's beloved, I'm okay with that idea. Hey, like me all you want. I have a cousin who's an atheist, and he said to one of our oldest daughter, Cara, she writes him and tries to get him saved. And he wrote to her and said, I don't believe in God. And I know. But if you want to pray for me, it's okay. And you could even have your churches pray for me, just in case. But I'm an atheist and I don't believe in it. But I'll tell you what, just in case there's something to it, yeah. Go ahead. So that's all she needed. So she just keeps writing him and sending him stuff and praying for him and everything. Yeah, keep it up, it's okay. But I don't believe in that. I don't believe there's anything to it. But just in case, just go ahead. I mean, it's better than, leaving me alone, because he's afraid of dying. He's had a lot of, he's a year older than I am, but he's got millions of dollars in the bank, but he's always worried about dying. And so he has to face that, and got all his family problems and so on. So he looks at me and he goes, well, I wish I could have the faith you have. But I'm afraid I'd be a liar if I said I did. I don't.
I don't believe in what you have, but, you know, I like you, and, you know, you're a nice cousin, and so on and so forth, because we grew up together in the same house and whatever. We had three families living in one two-car garage house, and so we knew each other very intimately and closely. But when you live together with somebody intimately and closely, you don't, it isn't always heaven. Y'all understand what I just said? So having people close to you is not necessarily a good thing. But I was ignorant and stupid, so it didn't matter to me. Whatever he did, he was my cousin, and I liked him. So he could misuse me and whatever, and I didn't care. Now, in this world, God protects people that are stupid and vulnerable and ignorant. I never went to church, ever. I was 11, first time I ever darkened the door of a church, first time, ever. I looked at them, I just thought they were all hypocrites. I mean, I just drove by a church and went, you know, a bunch of hypocrites in there. I don't know how I knew that, somebody probably said it, and I just said it. But I knew somehow they were, because I met with them, and they seemed to do some of the same stuff I was doing, but they just hid it, and I didn't hide mine. I didn't have anything to hide. I wasn't ashamed of being wicked or nasty or whatever else. I just knew who I was. So God wants us to know something that's so good that the rest of the world needs to know it. And now I've fallen in love with Jesus, but that was a Jesus thing. I did not help him out. I did not pray for it. I didn't ask for it. I wasn't looking for it. It's just I was trying to, being a pastor, I felt I should know something about the Bible. Kind of ruined my life after that because I started to learn about it. And what happened? I started to believe in it. I wasn't expecting that. I was just trying to get paid to do the pastor thing. It's an easy job. You just have one day a week you work. In fact, it's only a 20-minute sermon. Pretty easy. Not much to that except a few people die and get married and, you know, stuff like that. Baby baptisms and stuff. You get paid for that part too. So, hey, just come on. Let's do it. So I had no religion in me. Can you imagine there are pastors out there that are not Christians? There's a ton of them. There's a ton of them. So that always amazed me is, why do you want to be a pastor? Why don't you just go out and get drunk like you want to do, or sleep around, or whatever you want to do? Why do you want to call yourself a Christian and a pastor? I mean, I don't get it. I know why I want to do it. I like the easy job that I can do what I want to do the rest of the week. So, I mean, to me, I was clean in the sense of being no good. It's just like there's nothing to hide. I didn't think there was a God. I hope there wasn't. I hope there wasn't a God, because if there was, I was in deep trouble. But God, who loved me, because he loved sinners, he found me somehow and said, you know, I'm what you're looking for. No, you aren't. I'm not looking for you. I don't want you. I don't want you to cramp my style. How many know you can live a wicked, stupid, sinful life and be quite content with it? I never had guilt. I never felt bad about cheating people, lying to people, stealing from people. I never felt bad about that. Using people, I love that. I thought that was... that was wonderful. I even knew to practice how to look innocent when I'd done something wrong. And I could con my mother, my father, everybody. Even in church, they thought he's a nice Christian boy because I sang in the choir. I just kind of like singing. And everybody was nice during the choir rehearsal, till after the thing, you know, but everybody was nice. And they had a ping pong table at the church, stuff like that. It was great. So I never had any sincerity in my life whatever. Now, however, I'm very sincere and very nice. Actually, I haven't changed a bit. Because you know what? I found out that God loved me as I was. Is that not amazing? So Daniel gets a picture, and this picture changes your life. But he got a picture of how great God was and that he could do anything. And I thought, that is weird. I mean, if you can be a sinner and get in, and then he wants to do good stuff for you, even though you don't deserve it, that sounds cool to me. Go for it, God. How many know that nobody talked me into that? I just was reading in the book. I thought, this is crazy. He actually says he likes everybody. Well, I'm one of the everybodies, so I guess he likes me. Well, do I have to like you back to get in on the deal? Do I have to pay you anything? What do you have to pay? Nothing. you're fine. Oh, cool. It's free. Everything in the Bible is free. Y'all see that? When God makes a promise, he obligated himself, not me. He said he would never leave me or forsake me. Cool. That is funny. I've taken it. You got anything else? I'll take all of it. How many are selfish like I am? You want everything that God has to give on the good side, and you don't want any of the negative side, but you deserve it all, but you don't want that part. Give me all the good stuff. You put all the bad stuff on Jesus. I'm happy for me to do wrong and Jesus to get, you know, beaten for it. Go for it, Jesus. I thought that was, to me, that was really good news. I do wrong and Jesus gets the whipping. I just thought that was cool. Do y'all see that? And Jesus liked it. He said, no, I like Jim so much. I'll take all his sins on me. Woohoo! That's good news. Is that not good news? Well, what's this have to do with the end times? Everything. Because in the end, the only ones that are going to make it are those that have faith in the goodness of God. Faith that God actually controls everything in history, including everything I eat and sleep and do and don't do and don't think and don't feel. And he controls everything. And he's got it all rigged for me to win. I love that. I think that's too good to be true. That is too good to be true. I marvel sometimes. What are you doing? You know, how can you smile? How can you even be alive and smile? You should be dead a million times, and you should be in prison. You should be, you know, in some other place. What are you doing? I'm not doing anything. I'm just being me, and God is just being him. And he likes to get me together with him. I don't really want to be there, but now I do. Because I've found this guy loads you daily with benefits. There's a lot of perks to this thing, and I get them for free. It comes in the mail. You've just won, you know, $1 million. It's like, wow, thanks, Jesus. Now, am I cheap and shallow? Absolutely. But is God serious?
Absolutely.
And he likes cheap and shallow people. In fact, he's not a respecter of persons at all. So the gospel, the good news is, there's nobody perfect. And I like that thought. I like the thought that everybody in this room is as wicked as I am. It's hard for me to imagine, but I can think of a couple of you. But it's hard for me to imagine that anyone could be as evil as I am, as cold as I am, as nasty as I am, as filthy as I am, as polluted as I am. But I am happy to hear it. And I always love it when people slip up, because it's like, oh, another guy just like me, only he got caught. I'm a pastor. I'm not going to get caught. Who would ever think of a pastor as being no good? But I find it's a virtue. It's a virtue to have no virtue, because Jesus has all my virtue. He is my righteousness. Now, I don't know why that would be good news to me if I were you, because I believe there's two or three of you that have sinned greatly. Want to raise your hand? Thank you. I thought there were two or three. I love that. I love that. I feel at home already. Now, and I heard the man, 7, clothed in linen. The linen is probably white linen, and it's probably also a symbol of some kind of righteous person, which was upon the waters of the river when he held up his right hand. That's the hand of the gospel, the good news, redemption, mercy. And on the left hand, that is related to this world. He raised both hands to heaven and swore by him that liveth forever. That's God. That it shall be for a time, times, and a half. How long is that? Code language. Right. A time, how do we know this? Because of the New Testament. You don't know it from here. You'd have to read the New Testament in the book of Revelation. It tells you exactly what it is. 1,260 days, 42 months, 3.5 years. It tells you. But that's what he means by time. That's 1 year. Two times, but it just says, and times. Doesn't tell you if there's 15 of those or two of those. But we know it because of the New Testament, what that's talking about. And then it says and a half. So 3.5 years, exactly the time of the Antichrist, and exactly the time of the Christ. So Jesus gets 3.5 years of ministry, then the Antichrist, who's the substitute for Jesus,
who's Satan's substitute. Say, look, you want Jesus? Hey, you have to be good and decent? Hey, join my team. And so he's got an antichrist who is going to do signs and wonders and miracles, everything Jesus does, and try to copy him. And then everybody will worship him. And did you know the whole world will go after the guy? And it's going to happen in our day. You're going to see this, where people will start worshiping a man who happens to be, you know, and he describes it all in this book of Daniel. And you can read some more elsewhere. But most of it's right here in Daniel. So if you want to know everything about this guy, that he doesn't follow the God of his fathers and blah, 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 blah. And it gets so real if you read the papers today and if you watch TV or if you're acquainted with what's going on, it's almost like you can name that guy. It's Pastor Jim. But, no, it's not Pastor Jim. I'm the good guy. I'm the good guy. What makes me good? I'll tell you what makes me good. What makes me good is I believe God is good. Not that I am. I am not. I don't want to be. I never have been, period. But God is good, and he likes me, and I just love that. Has anyone else enjoyed the foolishness of God to love a sinner, someone that doesn't deserve anything? That is amazing to me that he'd waste his time on someone like me. I wouldn't. If I were God, I'd use my miracles for something better. I'd just wipe me out and get an angel or somebody who's more decent. But he happens to like me. That's what he says. I'm buying it. And it shall be that for a time, times and a half, and when he shall have accomplished to scatter the power of the holy people. Who are they? You could apply it to you, but it isn't talking about you. It's talking about the Jewish people. However, we're linked. We're linked. That comes from another book, though. But this right here is just referring to the holy people of Israel. Israel is going to have bad Israel people who will be destroyed during the 3.5 years, and good people. Okay? The biggest Holocaust for Israel was not Adolf Hitler. The biggest Holocaust was Jesus Christ. When he came, he ruined everything they had going for him. And he didn't have a gun, didn't have any money in the bank. He had nothing going for him. But they could not get over that guy. Even when they killed him, his followers claimed that he jumped up again. They couldn't win for losing. And it was hard. How many know that that would be frustrating if you were on the other guy's team to hear that Jesus is risen from the dead? It's like, yeah, I'd like to see him. No wicked person ever saw Jesus after he rose. But there were 500 that saw Jesus after he was risen from the dead who were alive even when Paul was writing one of his letters. They were still alive. They'd stayed alive. And so they were eyewitnesses. Yeah, we saw him. He was a little different. He walked through walls and stuff, but other than that, he was just Jesus. And he even ate food for them to say, come on, am I a ghost? Give me some food. Give me some fish. Let's eat some fish together. So he, sure enough, he ate it, and, you know, it didn't go right through him. That was amazing. So Jesus, somehow we're going to have new bodies like that in heaven. How would you like to have one of those where walls don't have any meaning and where you can never die and where you're going to live forever? I mean, that is weird stuff. We are weird to believe all that because we don't have any experience down here of that. Never seen that. We just have it written down in a book. There's nothing to make this book. How do you know this book is more real than Jack and the Beanstalk about throwing a bean and it goes all the way to heaven and fee-fo-fi-fum? How do you know this is more real? It's just a book. I can't tell you. All I know is I believe this book. I totally don't believe Jack and the Beanstalk. I believe that's a fairy tale. That's a little kid book. And, you know, I've tried throwing beans outside and they never grew up into anything. So I'm going for this one. This one has worked rather well for me for the last umpteen years since I met him. This thing has worked good. I'm just telling you, I'm happier and happier and happier every day. And, you know, to be not killed when you jump off the roof onto your head, that's a pretty cool one. That's cool. And to not be afraid at all, not to be worried, and not to be anything. And Peggy can tell you, I've been this way now for 30 years or whatever it's been, maybe 40 years.
But I've been this way ever when I returned, 1970. So yeah, it's 40 some years. I've been happy ever since. It's incredible. Just because I believe in Jesus. Well, that guy came. How long after this Daniel guy? Well, Daniel lives about 3,500 years into it, okay? And he's about, let's say, 600 to 500, I told you he almost lived 100 years, from Jesus. So he's about 500 years from Jesus when all of his words come to pass. So you can measure them. And since there was 70 times 7 prophesied for Israel, that's 490 years. That was 490 years. Well, he's 500 years before Jesus, so that's right about then. And that's how Simeon, and that's how, what's her name? Anna. Yeah, that's how they figured it out. They read the book. And they said, you know, this is just about that time. How did they do that? Because they had ancestor lists and all that, and they're in our Bible. You can just read them. And they had, in their own families, they carried these little lists and so on of who was my mother and my father and my grandmother and my grandfather and so on. And they had it going back. And you got a few of them in Luke and in Matthew and so on. You got them right here in the book. So they knew, hey, you know, it's almost time. And the wise men who didn't have those books and didn't have those annals, they read the stars. And they went, that is a weird, peculiar star. That's a king star, I think. I don't know how you know. I look out there. I don't know which one's king and queen. But they knew somehow somebody's born under that thing. And so they got on their, you know, camels or whatever they did, and they rode west. Go west, young man. And they rode west and got some gifts and so on. That is a peculiar story. That's a neat story. That they came to the time of his rising. Now, they didn't hit it when he was in the manger, like it says on the Christmas cards. Those Christmas cards are lying. But they were there early. But the Greek word is not baby. The Greek word is paideion, which means a young child, very young. So he's just a toddler. And it's okay. It's okay. We put him in a manger here and so on and so forth. But really, the kings can't show up then because he's in a house, not in a manger. He's in a house. By the time they get there. So they traveled slowly in those days. They didn't have airplanes. They didn't have, you know, buses and trains and stuff, cars. So it took them a while to get there. And when they saw him, they knew, this is the guy. But first they had a detour. Remember that? It's Christmas time sometime. This is part of the story. They took a detour and went to the king of Israel because they knew this guy was in the king of Israel thing. They told Herod, not knowing Herod was going to kill that little kid, if he could. And he went there and he said, where is the you know, king born? What king? The star that we're seeing in the sky. What star? Well, it you can't see it right now, but it's up there. It comes out at night. We follow it. What? What are you going to do when you see him? Well, we're going to worship him. Okay, well, tell me about it. I'll come and worship him too. But, you know, that's kind of a hokey story, so I think I'll wait here till you guys come back and bring a report. Okay. And so they take off for Bethlehem, but then when they get there, they have a dream. Don't go back and tell Herod. He's going to kill the child. Now, that's amazing, because these are foreigners. These are not Jewish people. These are people that know that the Christ child is born. That is weird. So it's neat how God can mess up your history, your understanding of how life works. It's a little bit more dramatic than what we see down here. Down here, it's kind of boring. If it weren't for TV and stuff, we wouldn't have much to do and get drunk once in a while and take some dope and, you know, sleep around and do messy things. But you know what? In those days, they didn't have all those things. They only had a few of them. They used the few very well. But today, we've perfected our sinfulness. A lot more entertaining and fun. How many know that we're having a lot more fun? But one of the problems is he's about to come back. And so I'm just telling you what time it is. It's time to sober up because your redemption draweth nigh. And as soon as you see the first signs of trouble, difficulty, and problems, it's not the end, but the end is close. In other words, it means it's the next thing on God's agenda. So God is about to reveal himself as King of Kings and Lord of Lords, but this time he's coming back with an army. But before that happens, he's going to let the Antichrist have his 3.5 years. He gets that time, and he's going to trouble Israel, and he's also going to purify the sons of Levi. While he's trying to destroy Israel, he actually won't succeed, but he'll only succeed in purifying the sons of Levi, which means they'll get their priesthood back, which means that during that time, they'll seek the Messiah at the very end. They got to go through the whole 3.5 year thing. And then the two witnesses, which is, well, what is that? It's for you to find out. A little bit of a secret there. So who are those two witnesses? Whoever they are, they're preaching the gospel right in the capital of the Antichrist, and he can't get rid of them till the last 3.5 days. He finally gets rid of them. But by then it's too late. By then it's too late, because all of a sudden now his days are numbered, because Jesus is going to come back in 3.5 days. So the 3.5 days of the 3.5 years, all of a sudden, the Antichrist has spent himself. He's done everything he can do. Finally, he's rejoicing that he killed him. Then they just jump up. Whoa, I thought we killed you guys. And they're like, what's the Terminator guy? You know, he keeps jumping back up or whatever. I don't know what they call that, but whatever that guy is, he keeps coming back. You know, and it's like, you can't kill these guys. They won't die. They have everlasting life. And Jesus comes back, big trumpet sound, and all of a sudden Jesus comes back, and what happens? The millennium is about to start. Jesus ties up the devil, ties up the Antichrist, ties up the, what you call it? They'd already wiped out the whore. She's gone. That's the religious whore. That is those that are pretending to be but are hypocrites and liars and aren't ready when the Messiah comes. But there are two groups that will be ready because of that furnace. The two groups are Christians, like us, who are wise, like us, and those of the Jewish people who have turned and said, we did wrong. We now know why all this trouble has come on us. 7 times Satan has tried to destroy us, but actually it was God. And therefore our sin is not to hate who did it, but to say we're sorry to God. The one we pierced actually was the Messiah. Didn't see it before. Sorry. How many know that God will forgive them and all of a sudden purify them, and they will again not just go back to where they were, but become Christians like us. They will serve the Messiah. They will submit to him, and for 1,000 years on earth, they will rule and reign with us. Jew and Gentile, both. It wouldn't surprise me that Jewish people will start to come into the churches now, not then, but some will trickle in as a kind of a hint that things are happening right now. There are more people in Israel today ever before in the history of the world that have turned to Yeshua, Jesus, as the Messiah than ever before. All other centuries, 21 of them, all put together, can't compare with the group that's on earth today. In other words, there's almost 130 or maybe 40,000 Sabras in Israel who have accepted Yeshua as their HaMashiach. And those are the ones that are going to be hearing us say, Baruch haba b'shem Adonai, blessed be he that cometh in the name of the Lord, and then he will come. And they'll be with us. They're going to be with us. But they have to go through the Antichrist furnace first. Thank God I'm not Jewish. So I don't want to go through that 3.5 year thing. I was ready during Y2K, and it didn't work. I had my beans, I still got my beans up in the attic. They're weighing the roof down, and they're still there. I got, I don't know, 20 or 30 buckets of them there. And David, do you still have yours?
Beans?
Yeah. You didn't buy beans? What'd you get?
Grain,
yeah, we got grain. You name it, we got it. We have tents, we have, you know, lanterns, we have batteries, bullets, probably all rotted by now, but still, we got it. I go up there and I'm going to look, see if the rats haven't eaten it all up yet. I'm not going to get ready next time. All right. And I heard, but I understood, verse 8. remember, he's going to finish this guy that waved his right hand and left hand up in the air. He said that he's going to scatter the power of the holy people, the Antichrist will. And all these things shall be finished, just what God said. And I heard, but I understood not. Then I said, O my Lord, what shall be the end of these things? And the Lord said to him, now he's about to tell him, because he said, God, could you explain all these things? And here's what God says. Go thy way, Daniel, for thy words are closed up and sealed until the time of the end. Aw, that's unfair. He could have given us a little sneak preview on that, a little trailer on that one. We need to see, what did Daniel see that we don't know? And it's written down right here. It's all here, but I can't decode it. How many know it's hard to decode? The government has really good computers that can decode and unscramble all your stuff, even if you covered it over 50,000 times. Not really. Actually, you can cover it up a little bit. But they can untangle a lot of it. All they have to do is have a few fragments somewhere, and they can reconstruct it, because they got computers that will do that on your computer to figure out everything you wrote and did and said and so on. They're trying to figure out your lives, and they're in on everything you do. Every email you make, every phone call you make, they got that all on some big monstrous computer somewhere. Now, they got lots of them, by the way. It doesn't matter, because God has everything recorded up in heaven, and I'm in the right book up there, and God hasn't erased my name yet. He hasn't blotted out my name from the Lamb's Book of Life. So when I get before the throne, I'm going to say to God, I'm going to tell God, God, don't look at the law book. Look at the Lamb's Book of Life. I'm in there. And God will probably ignore me and say, I can see why you don't want me to look in here. This is bad. This does not look good for you. You're in deep trouble. Say, God, this way, here, I'm just speaking for myself right here, God, speaking freely. Can I speak freely? Yes, sir, go ahead. Hang yourself. But he knows that I'm on his program, because he knows everything that's written in that book, and he knows I'm one of the ones. He's just testing me. And so what's he doing to test me? Because he knows I'm going to give the right answer. I believe in Jesus. He's my lawyer. Tell him, Jesus, we're together, right? Jesus. Tell your dad. And Jesus said, yeah, Dad, this is the one I'm going to marry. Good answer, Jesus. How much do I owe you? Nothing. You're going to be my wife. Oh, cool. And who's going to do the funeral? The marriage. Who's going to do the marriage? My father. Oh, the same one that's judging me right now? Yeah. He likes you too. Well, he's going to give you a hug. And I'm going to get a big hug from the judge. He's going to come out from the bench, give me a big hug, and say, whoa, I love you so much. What did I do? Let's not talk about what you did. Let's talk about what Jesus did on your behalf. Wow, that's cool. I'm going to credit that to your account because you believed what he said. You believed and you smiled. You actually were happy. You weren't beating yourself up or miserable or sad. You were happy after you heard what Jesus wrote down in this book. Even if I don't understand every single word, I don't need to. That's too much work. Amen? You know how I do it? I read it and I come across something I don't understand and I go, God, explain that to me, and then go to bed. And then I wake up, God gave me the answer. Do y'all believe that's possible? I'm just telling you, that's how I do it. I don't work hard at it. I work hard, but it doesn't do any good. The more I get it, try to work out one of the problems, the more deeper the thing becomes, the more entangled the thing is. God, I'm reading your word, and it don't make any sense. You're not saying what I want answered. Help out here. And God goes, just relax. Well, I can't until you help out. Then I'll relax. No, he said, you just better relax because you can't figure it out. I mean, no, you cannot. But once you let God do it, he figures it out. And you wake up in the morning, there's the answer right there. It might be through a dream. It might be through a scripture you read in the morning. It might be through your wife. I don't care how it comes. It's going to come. I had a problem yesterday I was working on, and there was no way I could figure it. And I just knew there was no answer to it, and I was getting nervouser and nervouser and nervouser. It's not a word, but You get the idea. So what happened? In the morning, I saw it. That's it. Ah, so simple. It's right there all the time, right on my nose. I didn't even see it. I'm free. Then, to prove it, I even asked my wife in the car this morning, Peg, let me ask you a question. Being clever like I am, that God had told me something, I'll see how much Peg knows. And she answered right off the bat. I mean, she didn't even ask for a revelation. She just knew right away. I went, golly, how do you know that? That took me, you know, all this research and then going to sleep and waking up and so on. You just got it right off the bat. I was amazed. That is funny. That is accurate. That is good, Peg. How'd you know that? Y'all understand? We serve an awesome God. I hope you're having fun here, meaning joy unspeakable and full of glory, every minute of every second of every day. Because you know why? That's what he said in the book. He said, rejoice in the Lord always. How often is always? Yeah, I mean, there is never a time when you're not rejoicing. Well, when do I get to complain? There's no time for it. Rejoicing is 100% of the time. So there's never a time when you can be miserable. Well, God, I like to be miserable for an hour or so. I'm used to it, and I'd like to have a little misery for a while, a little anger, a little bitterness. There's no time for it, Jim. It's only time for worship, praise, adoration, and joy unspeakable. Oh, okay. Well, cool. How many know that you cannot have misery when you're a Christian? I know 90% of the Christians are depressed and out of their skull. But it's only because they haven't believed what's in this book. And they didn't, you know what? You know what they did wrong? They tried to figure it. They tried to eat of that tree. I let God do all the work. I love it when God does something. I love it when I go, God, I think I'm going to lose this one right here. I don't think there's any answer to it. And then I'll just open the Bible. It'll be right there. Oh, I never saw that. That is so powerful. It's powerful. I think it's related to my job as a pastor to be faithful and to be pure, and I'm not, but yet God is, and that is amazing to me. It always amazes me every day. I'm just always amazed. Now, last few verses. Go thy way, verse 9, Daniel, for the words are closed up and sealed till the time of the end. Now remember, he's got 3,500 years, and then it's got to be at the end. Only there's subtract 1,000 from that, so that's 2,500 years. Only subtract 500 years, because that's when the Messiah comes. So there's then 2,000 years left. And that was between the time Jesus came to earth and now. 2,000 years gone. So whatever that time was, now we're in the last 1,000. And he hasn't come, but he said in the Bible he wouldn't come until the third day, which is now. The third day from what? From Jesus. So the first day, 1,000 years. Second day, 2,000 years. Well, we're past that now. We're into the 21st century. Well, it's sometime. Is it at the end of it? Definitely not. Is it at the beginning of it? Definitely. But when? When was Jesus resurrected? Remember, he was resurrected on the third day. You can read this, by the way, in Hosea 6:2 or 2:6, one of those. You can read about it because he tells exactly when it's going to be. But he doesn't tell exactly. He just tells, yeah, it's going to be on the third day. Well, we're in the third day now. So when's it going to be? In other words, what he's saying is, I'm not going to tell you because I want you to be ready. If I told you, then you might goof off. So I'd just like you to be ready. Well, what if I get ready early? It won't hurt you to be decent early. I mean, it won't hurt to rehearse before Jesus shows up. Otherwise, you might shrink back when he shows up. All this glory. You go, whoa. I'm not ready. I got 17 sins I haven't finished yet. The last hour. And so I have so many sins, I think I have more than anybody else. Is there anybody here who has equal my amount? You don't have to know how many there are. I knew Monty would have to raise his hand. But who else? Who else? Good, 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 good. Now, the point is we don't know how many sins we have, like Catholics who have to go to purgatory for all those years. We don't even know that because we don't even believe that because we don't think that's in the Bible, and it's not. Jesus Christ went to the cross for you, died once for all, it's over. You don't have to pay, you know, in the ante room when you get there. Well, how much is my bill? Pay up or you don't get in. Oh, we'd be standing out there for a long time. So Jesus has already paid the price. I'm in for free. I think it's been, see if my bill is already prepaid. I think Jesus might have paid for it. You're right. Jim? Yeah, Jim Borchardt. Yeah, you're in. I knew it. Thank you, Jesus. Did you know it's wrong to be happy if you're a moral person, if you're a religious person? But as a Christian, it's not wrong to be happy right now. Did you know you can be happy before you see everything? Do you know you can be happy today and forever? Do you know it's not wrong? I mean, most Christians are afraid to be happy because they know something bad is going to happen if they get too happy. Better not be happy or something. The devil will do something and get me. Did you know that that's a lie from hell? As a matter of fact, even though you might have just done the biggest, most heinous sin, God wants you to be happy and give that sin to him. Jesus, I just did the biggest, most heinous sin. Can I laugh still? Will Jesus let you laugh if you've just done the most biggest, horriblest, rottenest thing? Yes. What if I make a promise and don't keep it? What if? Well, what if I do it two times in a row? It doesn't matter. You see, when Jesus said it's over, it's over. So that's good news. Now, Daniel is talking about this end times. Many shall be purified. Woo! And made white and tried. In other words, you're going to go through the furnace. But the wicked shall do wickedly. In other words, some will not, some will. Which ones? Which ones are the wicked? Which ones are the righteous? Great question for you to ask. You need to know you're on the righteous side. How? Well, for one thing, you wouldn't have come out on a Sunday night if you weren't righteous. You'd be at home doing something else. But because you came, you're all going to heaven. Well, that may not be true. That may not. I may have made that part up. Could we take the collection right now? But I just want you to know, coming out like this indicates you have a hunger inside for righteousness. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst after righteousness. Not mine. I don't have any. After his. He said he did it for me. He didn't say he did it for himself. He said for sure he didn't. He says, for sure, it's for all mankind. Anybody can get in on it. The worst scoundrel can get in on it. Man, that is good news. If the worst scoundrel can get in on it, that's me. Anybody can get in on it. I guarantee you, I've never thought of myself as decent or good ever in my whole life, even after a Christian. I know I'm still not. I could flip back like that. But the neat thing is, I don't need to now, because Jesus takes care of everything. His promises are so big, they cover all my wickedness. His mercy is bigger than my sin. Is that not interesting? Did you know that he can stretch joy and mercy and peace over everything I've ever thought, said, and done? Like, Jim, I got you covered. How'd you do that? I've always liked you. Really? How did you know what I was going to do? Before the world even began, I knew you. You did? Well, didn't you know I would be wicked and bad and nasty and so on and so forth? Yeah, I did. So I can't brag on how good a pastor I've been or how good a husband or how good a wife or how good of anything. I've never had any goodness, but I have a good God. David did not meet Goliath because he was good or tall. Saul was taller than David. The reason that David beat him was because his God was bigger than Goliath's God. Goliath had a little God, David had a big God. So David was a little man with a big God, that's better than a big man with a little God. And so his God prevailed. I believe God threw that stone and aimed it right at the guy's forehead, not to kill him, just to stun him, so that David could come and finish him off. Remember how he picked up the big old sword that he had? Hey, this thing is heavy. Bubba.
And he said, and I believe Goliath was still alive, and he was still, you know, focusing on it, but he was just kind of still stunned, like, that little jerk knocked me down with one rock. How in the heck did that little kid do that?
And so at that moment, David is lifting up that sword, and he can hardly lift it up, and then it just falls down right on his neck and cuts his head off. By golly, that kid won.
Changed world history. Changed the history of the world. If it hadn't been for that, they would have all been slaves of the Philistines. Just like someone's trying to make them today. Palestinian, Philistine, same.
So the Palestinians and the Philistines are the same. It's the same word.
So what happened is those guys didn't win, and they will never win. Ever. But Jesus and his people, they win all the time. The Jews can't win. I mean, you know, the Jews with all their law-keeping and all their paraphernalia and bowing at the wall and all that and the curls and all that stuff, that doesn't mean anything to God. He is not impressed. It's not perfect. It's not Jesus. He's already given Jesus. He doesn't want anything else. So all your goodness stinks to God. All your good ideas stink. They'll all burn up. Let it go. Let it go. You're not better than anybody else. You're exactly the same. Sorry. Nobody has more faith than you do. Nobody has less. Every man is given a measure of faith. So, Jesus did that by making a promise. And the promise was, I don't want you to do anything. I want to do everything. And I want to do it for you. And I want to do it in you. And I want to do it through you. You trust me? No. He's okay with that. But that doesn't mean anything. How many know when you say no, that's not the last word? I remember saying no to Jesus a whole bunch of times, and that wasn't the last word. All of a sudden now, today, he's got me doing all this stuff, and I was never intending to. I never intended to be a Christian or a pastor or a good husband or a good anything. I was always intending to be what you're not supposed to be. And it just didn't happen. I never got my agenda done. But I'm so happy now, I'm not going back. Why would I want to? How could I have more than I have right now? I have everything I've ever wanted. And I haven't even seen it all. But what little I've seen, I love it. It's more than enough. Has God not done for you more than enough? Well, I don't care about you. And he has for me. So, the best. Let's read the last part. And from the time... This is secret code word. And from the time that the daily sacrifice shall be taken away, and the abomination that maketh desolate set up, there shall be 1,290 days. How many days is 3.5 years? 30. Did you know that in the Bible, a month is always 30 days? They didn't have like our calendar and our way of adding stuff. So if they say, but their days are the same, so it doesn't matter, because they have their own tricky way of doing it. They had a lunar calendar. Month is 30 days. They didn't have any 31s and 29s and 28s and stuff. They just had 30s. And so they had 12 months times 30 is 360 with that. Left the other 4.25 or whatever it is alone. But they had a way of adding those in and goofing around and so on and so forth. So they calculated it. But this 30 extra days is 3.5 years plus a month. But now watch. So the abomination is going to be there for 1,260 days. It'll be there for another month. Why? Why? Because it's only supposed to be there 1,260 days, 3.5. Then the guy's over. He's got him chained and strapped. But the abomination's still there. The sacrifice hasn't yet been taken care of. Why? Because Jesus already made the sacrifice. So you got another 30 days, one more month. Blessed is he that waiteth and cometh to the 1,305 days. Well, how many is that? 1, 3, 3, 5.
How many is that? Remember? 1,260 plus a month, it's 1,290, plus another month and a half, 45 days. That's 1,335. Now, why that time? You know what? Nobody knows. But I'll tell you this. I have an idea. That's because he's making the transition now from wiping out the enemy, cleaning up stuff, getting the throne set up, the marriage supper, all this kind of stuff, doing all the stuff he's doing, and then everything will be restored to where it was supposed to be. But it's not on earth stuff. It's a spiritual stuff on earth. It's heaven on earth. And it'll all be cleaned. So blessed is the one that waits, even though the 3.5 years is over. There's still some change time. It's just like when the president gets elected, he doesn't even take office, though, until the middle of January 20th. Right? So it isn't actually 4 years. The guy, you know, has a little thing where he's not the president anymore, and yet he's kind of is one. And it's kind of all confusing. Same thing here. There's a transition time between the end of the world, because the world comes to an end at the end of the time of the Gentiles, not at the end of 1,000 years. The world comes to an end when darkness is destroyed and never will rule this world again, because you and I will be ruling. You see this? But there has to be a transition time where he gives us all our crowns and our scepters and stuff. Barbara, here's your crown. Okay. Judy, here's your crown. And it just takes time, because we're still in time. So it's days. It's not eternity. It's time. And then, you know, somebody is going to get a crown, and another person. So we all got our crowns. And it took a little several months to get everything transformed over. I'm learning to wear my new robe. You know, have this big heavy thing, like, you know, a judge or something. And okay. Yeah, you look good too. And you got a scepter? Yeah, somewhere here. Yeah, well, what happened to my scepter? Who took my scepter? You know. So we're learning to hold our scepters, and we are not yet used to ruling. So it'd be good if you practice now. Because there'll be a whole bunch that will just barely get in, and they need that transition time. I'm not joking. There'll be a transition time of cleansing the old, purifying the old. If you read the Old Testament, you'll discover this happened all the time. A person who was unclean went outside the camp. Then they came back to the camp. The high priest checked them over, and then he said, "You're clean." But they weren't yet clean, even though they were clean. Then he said, "Okay, you're clean, but now ritually you still can't go to the temple, and you cannot go to your tent, but wait another 7 days." They wait another 7 days, and he says, "Okay, you're clean again. You're clean. So now you can go and sleep outside your tent, but not inside your tent." And then he waited another week, and then he said, "Okay, now you can go back to the temple and worship God." That's how God did it. So it doesn't just happen. It happens and happens and happens and happens. That's why I said, blessed is he who doesn't care, because you just trust God. How many know it isn't easy just to become a Christian and all of a sudden you're a Christian? It's true, you are. But also, there's a cleansing that takes place, spirit, soul, body, clothing, learn the protocol of your office, you know, all kinds of things. So you learn how to, can I sit on the throne, Jesus? Jim, you're not ready yet. Okay, well, can I do it tomorrow? All right, tomorrow, you can do it. And I want to go up and try that throne out. Is this my throne right here? No, that's Judy's. Oh, poo. Where's mine? Right behind hers. Behind, I want to be on the throne next to you. And we'll be going through all those rehearsals. How many know that that's just the way things are done? Don't make heaven so obviously different than here. It is different, but it's also similar. Everything in the Old Testament is a type and a shadow of everything that will be done in the kingdom. So don't think it's just like, boom, all of a sudden you're there. There's actually all these transitions that take place. And you are patient. You're not nervous standing in line. I know I get nervous standing in line. I get nervous. Well, when's my turn? When, you know, I'm not going to be calm and peaceful unless I remember these verses. Oh, yeah, I remember he said 1,335 days. Oh, we've got more 7 more days. So I won't get nervous. Why? Because of that time thing. Otherwise, I'd have been really nervous. Man, this could take 1,000 years maybe. No. It's just another month and then a month and a half. Interesting. Another month and then another month and a half. That's not so bad. So, how much is that altogether? 30 plus 45. 75. So, 75 extra days after the Antichrist is, you know, taken, chained up, thrown into the pit, the other guy, false prophet, the other guy, Satan himself, the big dragon, thrown down in the pit. Well, that's going to take a little while. Other things. But when Jesus comes back, he can do all of that. He knows exactly what's first, second, third, and fourth. He's got an agenda, and he's going to do it just on time. You know what? It's going to be fun to see his inauguration on the earth. You're going to be there. That will be fun. I've been at the inauguration down here in Austin when the governor and the lieutenant governor, Peggy and I, went last time. Was it last time? Yeah. We were guests. There's only like 200 people that get to go out of the state. We were important. We were really important. And you could eat a lot of food, too. And then if it was cold out there, because it's always in January, they gave you these little blankets. We still have them. We folded them up, and we've got them. Just in case the Antichrist starts, we've got those blankets. And so when it was cold for everybody else, we were sitting there warm because they gave us these nice blankets. Bought it for everybody that was up there. That was neat. That was exciting. So I'm going to be ready for that. That the inauguration, then you got the marriage supper of the Lamb, you got, you know, the chaining of the beasts. I want to see all that stuff. Now, what's on the agenda today? Oh, yeah, chaining of the beast today. Hey, let's go. Where is that? Now, I'm joking. I'm not telling the truth. But it's like that, is don't be nervous about not understanding everything written in the Bible. Read the good parts that you understand, skip the bad parts. But read them anyway, and just go, well, I have no idea what that means, but I know it's going to be good. I know it's for my benefit. I know he didn't say it for no reason. He put that 1,290 in there, 30 extra days. Then he put the 1,235, 1,335 in there for a reason. I don't know exactly what it is, but it's kind of what I said. I don't know what the deal is. Remember, you're still in time. So Jesus, when he comes back, is in Jerusalem. It's not in Fort Worth. But I'm going to be here in Fort Worth for him. How about you?
Yes.
Yeah, you're going to be here too. We're going to be running the place. Man, we'll take all the offices. That'll be awesome. And I'm going to, you know what I'm going to do first? Because I'm taking over here. What else? What will happen? I'm going to cancel all the property tax things. That's what I'm going to do. That's the first thing I'm going to do. And no more school property tax things. No, I'm going to get rid of that beast thing first. Because there's a lot of oppression there and a lot of darkness. I haven't thought the thing through thoroughly. But I'm sure I'll be adequate because I don't even need a phone. Jesus actually will be inside of me telling me what to do. Jim, what are you doing? Well, I was going to cancel all that. No, Jim, do it like this. Oh, good idea. It's even better than I had. You're so smart, Jesus. I said, Jim, hang up. I told you what to do. And so I was going to keep him on the line. Now, the best has been saved to the last. Do you know that you are the most blessed generation that has ever lived? Not because you're any good, not because you're strong and powerful and capable, not because of any reason whatsoever except this. You're at the last. That's all. Because he has saved the best to the last. In other words, everything that he promised that he was going to do and hasn't done yet, it'll be done. So everything written in Daniel, it has to come to pass just as he said. And here's the thing about reading Daniel. He's talking about 4 kingdoms. Babylon, Persia, Greece, and Rome. He lives during the first 2. And then, you know what he does? He tells all about Greece before there is a Greece and tells how many... He tells exactly how it's going to be with Alexander the Great. He tells exactly what the Caesars are going to be like. He tells exactly how many apotheoses there's going to be, where Rome will make itself again, be wounded, and then it'll be healed, and then make another Rome and another Rome. There'll be 3 different Romes. That's why Adolf Hitler got his timing wrong. He thought he was the Third Reich. Do you remember that? He thought he was the third thing. And he thought he was going to have a 1,000-year reign. Stupid. He should have read the Bible. But he had a Catholic background, and therefore they weren't allowed to read the Bible, so he didn't read the Bible carefully enough. Because he'd have found out that he was a little bit early. Instead of 1,000 years, he had 12. That was different. How many know that he was going to be the Führer? He was just a painter. But he said, you know, I'd like to be the Führer. And all of a sudden, he was the Führer. And he said, you know, I think I'd like to be the Führer, not just of Germany and of all the German peoples. I would like to be of everybody in the whole world. And he went to the Japanese, made a deal, and so on and so forth. And so everybody then began to think, geez, maybe this guy's going to make it. Because he changed the calibers on everything. And you couldn't, this guy was smart. And he had a lot of smart people working for him. And it looked almost like he was going to pull it off. I was born, Peggy was born before me, but I picked this up from Peggy because she was there 5 days earlier. But I was born exactly at the time when France fell and when England was being bombed, right exactly at that moment. So it looked like everything was going to fall to him. He'd already taken Poland, Czechoslovakia, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. France had just fallen, and now German air fleet was going over London to bomb it and destroy them forever. Now, as you know, it didn't work. But he had that thing all rigged up. It was so close to perfection. Nothing could have stopped him. He wanted the British to join him. He wanted to make a deal with them. And he thought he had one. But then the Yanks, us, we entered the war, and that was the end of Adolf. How many know that Britain would not have won without us coming in? So we're the saviors. I think they've forgotten that. They've forgotten the debt they owe us. And the French, too. They forgot that we are the ones that set France free. Hello. Now, all I'm saying is this. We're the foolish, most foolish generation probably that's ever been on the face of the earth, spoiled and everything else. So what? God likes us and likes everybody. He'd like everybody to be in his kingdom. There's room in his house. He's got a big house. Big house. 1,500 miles up in the air. That is a lot of miles. A mile is 5,000, you know, 280. Did you say 280? I thought it was 79. So that's a lot of feet. And an airplane, the highest they fly normally is about 36,000. Well, that's just a couple of miles. This is 1,500 miles up in the air. That's kind of tall. You could probably see that if you stood on the sun. Well, probably not likely. If you stood on the moon, you could see that thing wobbling. You know, is that 1,500-mile structure. It's 1,500 miles wide, 1,500 miles deep, and 1,500 miles up. It's a cube hovering right over the earth. Hovering right over the earth. So it's okay. The earth's okay. Can still zip around. But God is so wise that there's lots of room in his house. There's so much room that everybody can fit in there. You won't even be able to see the end of your property. You don't have to worry about how big your mansion is. It's just one big house. And you have a room inside that mansion. And I think they have waiter service. They do. I know they do. And colored TV. I know they have colored TV. And you know what will be on TV? Your life and mine. Here's what really happened. Oh, my gosh. Let's go to that one again. Go to that one. Oh, I thought that guy was good. Look at that guy. He was as bad as I was. I want to see all of your things. I'll type it in. Okay. Yeah, wow. And we get to read your heart and your soul. And, you know, just like, it'll be fun. I think it'll be joyful in heaven. You know what? No one's ever been there. I know they write books on it. Well, I don't believe all that. I'm sorry. I don't believe it. I don't even care if it's true. I want to stick to this book. This book I know is true. I don't want to, you know, go on what somebody else said about the streets, what color they are, and about how big angels are, and so on. I don't want to know about that stuff. I know it's fascinating. I'm not fascinated by it. Never have read one of those accounts, never want to, never will. Why? Because I got this book. This is the only book I want. I don't care what someone else has got. I wouldn't believe it. I don't care how vivid their description was. I believe our God is an awesome God. I believe the best has been saved to the last, and I believe you and I will be in heaven someday, soon, with Him. I love you all.